Welcome to Cure America. I'm Star Parker. Well, the first major crisis of the Biden administration is taking place along our southern border. Many have seen the heartbreaking pictures of children housed in crowded conditions and thousands of people still heading up through Mexico as a new wave of foreigners makes their way to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary, the new secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, says we are on pace to encounter more individuals on the southern border than we have seen in the last 20 years. Well, like as if that's good news. Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, about 75,000 arrests were made by Border Patrol agents of migrants crossing just in February. The majority of these family units and unaccompanied minors are just coming up from the Northern Triangle countries of Central America, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. Look, I can understand why. The per capita income annually in the United States is around $65,000. But in Honduras, it's $2,500. In Guatemala, it's $4,500. And in El Salvador, it's $4,000. Yeah, we can understand the conditions that would motivate someone to consider entering the United States illegally. But why are they coming now in droves again? We got that kind of settled out. Well, you can try it, and people will try it when you think you will succeed. And in fact, ABC News asked one migrant if he would have attempted a journey through the Trump administration, and he said, no way. In fact, another migrant told the New York Times that Biden is our only hope. Undoubtedly, the root problem in their countries is poverty, violence, political upheaval, lack of freedom, a lack of access to a free market. You know, many foreigners from around the world want to come to the U.S. for the economic opportunities more often than not. We are a vibrant and a prosperous nation. But the U.S. has a rule of law, and we have an immigration system, a really good one if people would just adhere to it. Economic opportunity, though, is not a lawful reason for claiming asylum and to illegally cross into our country. The Trump administration understood this. So they ended things like catch and release. And then they began to work with Mexico and the Northern Triangle countries to help them build their economies. So to help fix our southern border and our immigration system, places that we need to change things. But by signaling that our borders are now open, and by ending many of the border protections that were put in place by the Trump administration, this Biden administration is putting children and families in danger. And more often, these children are teenagers who already don't want supervision. And they're coming in our country in droves now. Transnational criminal organizations, drug cartels, and human traffickers are all too happy to step up and to help parents get their children across the border. But for a price, children are being put in the hands of coyotes and gangs in an effort to come to a better place. It's a lot of pain. Of course, this is really hard. And a lot of us Americans are just renting it, trying to watch this happen to our country. The U.S., we're the most generous nation on earth through our taxpayer money and through private philanthropy. So we always want to help the stranger. We've always been willing to help the stranger. You remember, give us all your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. But something has gone really wrong with the Biden policies, and it's caused this immigration crisis. So we need to think about our southern border this week on Cure America. What will the emotional and economic impact of this new crisis be for our country? It's really not looking real healthy. And more importantly, what will happen to the children being exploited by our broken system? And yes, we're calling them children, but when you're thinking about 15, 16, 17-year-olds, this is not something that we can just let go. This is not something we can pretend will go away. So we have to ask ourselves, can anything be done from both sides of the border to solve this problem? So we have some very special guests today. They're going to help us come up with some solutions for the influx of migrants that are now in our country and the new ones that are flowing up this way, heading toward our country and our border. So first we have a former director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in the Trump administration. His name is Joe Edlow. This agency is the ones that do the processing of the asylum claims. They handle all of the legal immigration system. So he is an incredible expert. Joe also has served at the Department of Justice and on Capitol Hill, specializing in these issues. He's an attorney, and he knows the ins and outs of our entire immigration system. So you don't want to miss that. We'll also be discussing the humanitarian crisis and the terrible impact that it's having on children. Oh, my goodness, they're being put at tremendous risk, sometimes by their own parents. Here, honey, go. Here's your little lunch bag, and I'm hoping you the best. They just want to get refuge in America. I get that. But, boy, it's dangerous. So our guest, Laura Reese, she's worked on immigration issues in both the Trump administration, the Bush administration. She's had 20 years of experience in this. She most recently served as chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. She's now the director of Center for Technology Policy and senior fellow over at the Heritage Foundation on Homeland Security issues. But her previous job, she was right there with Ken Cuccinelli, who you've met here on Cure America. And so she'll be discussing some things with us as well. And then, of course, our distinguished panel. We're going to help cut through the noise of the news. We're going to try to come up with a cure for our immigration policies. And so we're going to get into all of these issues right after this important message.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. We've got a new year in front of us, 2021, and new opportunities. But for many, we've got the same old problem. There's that emptiness in your heart, and you've been trying to fill it with drugs and alcohol and sex and everything else, but it just doesn't work. You've been searching, but you don't even know what you're searching for. God is the only one who can fill that vacuum. If you've never trusted His Son, Jesus Christ, as your Savior, do that today. You see, Jesus took our sins. He died on the cross. He was buried, and God raised Him to life. And He can come into your heart and change you and forgive you. Just pray this prayer with me right now. Just say, God, I'm a sinner. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I believe Jesus is your Son, and I want to trust Him today as my Savior. I want to invite Him to come into my life and take control. If you prayed that prayer, call that number that's on the screen. Do it right now. Call that number. Someone's willing to speak with you right now. Call that number. God bless.
Of course, everyone wants freedom and to live free in a free country, but sometimes it's just not possible for everyone. So we're going to have Joe Enloe help me sort through some of these challenges that we're seeing now at the border, as well as in our whole immigration system. Joe Enloe is newly formed your group, the Enloe Group. He used to serve as the director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in the Trump administration. That's the agency that actually administers our legal immigration system. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how did you get into that work of watching over our immigration
system? I've been in immigration since 2008. I started with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement as a prosecutor in the Baltimore field office, handling deportation and criminal matters before the immigration judges, and then moved into the policy world on Capitol Hill, and then was fortunate enough to be picked up by the administration, both in the Justice Department handling immigration regulations, and then moving over first as chief counsel at USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, mm-hmm. and then as the acting director. So it's been a fantastic journey for me, and I care so deeply about this issue that I'm glad I've been able to work at such high levels on it.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Why do you feel so deeply about this issue? I know a little bit of your background from being in Baltimore, and you have a passion for the underserved, and so what led you down this path?
You know, for me, it's about the rule of law, okay. and it's about the integrity of the law, right. And I feel very strongly that laws, our border is a law, right? So to have that enforcement along the border to keep people at bay. I have no problem with people coming in. I think we have such an important humanitarian mission to serve, and we have such an important role to play in the world with regard to immigration, but there are so many people that come in and do it the right way, and that's what I want to be a part of. That's what I want to see held to held on a pedestal, yeah. And instead we seem to be so focused on border crisis after border crisis because people are just flooding in.
Well, let's transition into why this new flood, because mm-hmm. you're right, we have a rule of law, we have a very benevolent country, we love our immigrants, but we also want to make sure that we can provide for all, if you will, that mm-hmm. the opportunities here continue to flourish because people are abiding by our legal system. Now we're seeing, you guys put some components in place that have been removed. You guys being the Trump administration that have been removed very early in this year. And by February, we were in crisis again. What has happened? What are they getting wrong, this new administration, that we're starting to see this influx again?
Well, I wish I could say it's something they're getting wrong. I think it's being done on purpose. I think the Biden border crisis is being caused by the policies that they're putting in place, and they know exactly what they're doing. During the Trump administration, we took great care to make sure that we were enforcing the law, mm-hmm. and that we were looking at every part of the immigration laws to see what could we do better. Mm-hmm. That's why we made it so that when people started to come across, they knew it wasn't a guarantee to get into this country, to get a work permit, and to just live here and disappear. Instead, they might have to stay in Mexico. They would get in front of an immigration judge, but they'd have to wait in Mexico to hear with that, to speak with that immigration judge and come over to the United States just for those hearings. There were other programs where we took people in, gave them all the process that they were due, mm-hmm. but did it in a much more expedited manner, okay. to make sure that their case could be completed. And some of those people absolutely got relief. They got to stay, they got protection, but they got it sooner than they would if they had just been released into the country, mm-hmm. and allowed to go the normal process, which takes forever. But
that was where there were some significant changes that the Trump administration said, we're not doing this catch and release anymore. We're
correct.
Not going to have this just kind of go into
correct.
The country and maybe we'll find you later, maybe not.
You came here. You knew that it was not, you were going to begin your process. You were going to get an order to appear before a judge. Mm-hmm. Now, the first day of the Biden administration, they put an executive order in place to say, we're going to suspend all deportations for 100 days. Oh, we're going to suspend this Remain in Mexico program. We're going to let all those people come in and live in the country while they're waiting.
Oh, this is not good, because didn't the Trump administration work a deal with the Mexican government say, come on, guys, these are human beings. We know that they're in dire straits, coming from countries that are in turmoil, but let's see if we can put in a real good system to make it work for both of our countries, but as well as for these individuals.
Not only with the Mexican government, but the Trump administration had worked out deals to bolster the asylum system of other Central American countries, too, to bring them into the game.
Okay.
And that has all been undone. Now, I've heard that even possibly the Biden transition team was talking to Mexico before President Biden was even inaugurated, and was involved in maybe undoing some of those cooperations. And now they're talking with Vice President Harris moving into a leadership role along the border. They're talking about starting to form cooperative agreements with Central America and with Mexico. It's what we did and what they dismantled.
Well, I'm wondering, though, to get back to what you said about their agenda behind mm-hmm. this, because why would you dismantle a system that's going to make their countries great again, too, that's going to help them move into a society that's equitable, that people don't have to leave their country? Is there something else going on here? Is there an agenda that we should know about?
Well, I think the agenda is a very leftist agenda of open borders.
Okay.
And that is what the president, what the administration is really bowing down to at this point. Mm-hmm. When you say we're not going to enforce the laws, you can expect to see just floods of people come up, and that's what we're getting. And then you run into issues where, just a few weeks ago, we saw that horrific car accident in Southern...
Two of them. We had one in Southern California.
Yeah.
I know.
And 20-some people in that car.
Oh, dear.
Was it 15 or so were killed or seriously injured?
Yeah.
And it's because the smugglers know that the risk is worth the reward now.
Yeah.
Because if you get in, you're probably going to get to stay.
Well, yeah,
and
people are risking a lot to try to get in because they know the beauty of our country and they've heard about it, and now they see an administration that's saying, hey, wink, wink, nod, nod. But you said that this is the agenda of the left. You also see on the right, you start seeing the Chamber of Commerce and others that are saying, well, maybe we should, allow them to come because we need the workers.
Well, and that's
what was
been
the attitude of the Trump administration regarding that side of the equation, to say that we have to get some people to work those jobs that many say no American will take.
The purpose of immigration in terms of the economic development, the economic continuity of our government, our country, is to stay competitive in the world market.
Okay.
So I strongly believe in bringing high-skilled people over, mm-hmm. The best and the brightest, as President Trump often said. But when you get individuals coming in en masse and doing jobs that are suppressing the wages of American workers, hampering the ability of college kids, college graduates to find entry-level jobs, you know, that's where you run a problem. That's where you run to a problem. One of my favorite sayings is that the immigration system was there to supplement the economy of the United States.
Okay.
And yet right now, we're seeing it supplant the economy.
It really is. It really is. And I'm wondering, in that supplanting of the economy, where the unions are. How come they're not weighing in on the side of the Trump administration at this point to say, hey, guys, I think we're moving in the wrong direction? Because when we're looking at the crises that we're facing as a country with the pandemic, with after last year's summer of love destroying most of our urban communities, these folks get in the country and they'll get lost up inside of it.
It's true. But with the unions, they want to see individuals get some sort of status because then they can bring them into the union fold.
Oh, you see,
that's where it comes down. They're very much in favor of legalization because then they control them. And that's what we're seeing.
So what I'm hearing you say then is there's just almost like a hidden reality that, okay, get them in, start them out, then they're going to end up at our doorstep to get union wages, and then we will be beholden to the left and the Democrat Party forever.
That's what I think.
It doesn't matter that the school systems are changing.
No.
It doesn't matter that now we have all of this urban challenge because of the ones tightly put together there, and even the humanitarian part of it, to where we're seeing, I mean, droves now in places that are very, very crowded.
Droves of people coming in, and the number of unaccompanied alien children, the minors that are coming and that are making this dangerous journey. What the Biden administration is doing is encouraging this journey.
Dear.
And, you know, you've got some people that have their parents already in the United States, so they're now sending for them, and they know that it's a safer time to do it because there's more of a chance they're going to get into the country. And I mean safer in terms of the legal consequences.
Once they get in, if they can get through all of that,
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm just saying, I'm running out of time here. But what I just want to do is say, okay, so the EDLO, now your EDLO group, are you still going to be working in these issues? Because we've got to come up with some solutions.
Absolutely.
Around this administration.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm doing immigration consulting for, you know, anyone that needs help to figure out the best way to do things legally. But I'm also working with several states. I don't want to mention right now with attorneys general offices, governor's offices, and also various law enforcement groups to help guide their future litigation and to guide their government relations strategy with regard to this issue, to make sure that Congress is really educated on what is going on and how we can make a difference here.
We've got to make a difference here. I think people are very concerned about not just the immigrant trying to get in the country, but our own country. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing, Joe, and I look to see you in the future.
Absolutely.
Okay, because this is not going to go away overnight. And so I'll be talking to my panel right after this important message. Whoa, it's a crisis. This is interesting to hear what Joe had to say. And so, of course, now I have my panel with me so we can kind of sort through what we heard and what we need to do. You know, I know most of you are very concerned. We love people, and we really want people to be satisfied in their lives. But what we're seeing right now is not working down at that border. So I have Terry Jeffrey. Terry is back with us. Yes, a longtime editor-in-chief at CNS News. It's an alternative news source to the mainstream news. So you need to make sure that you follow Terry and get his columns. He was the editor at the Washington Times and Human Events. Thanks so much for coming back.
It's good to be here.
You must have had fun the last time.
I did.
Oh, did you? Oh,
thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. We need a journalist because you're all over these issues, so I need to always talk to you. So I'm glad that now you're in our rotation. Jonathan Alexander, he always loves us. He is our attorney. He is a constitutional attorney and senior counsel for governmental affairs for Liberty Counsel Action.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah,
and I need to stop saying you're our attorney because you're not Cure's actual attorney. You're just my buddy. And I have to ask you constitutional questions. No, we actually have another legal team here in Washington that does all those little details to keep me out of jail. But Jonathan keeps us hot on the issue, so thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting question about what's going to happen in the court, so I'm glad that you're here with us again. And then Michael Howe, you came back, senior advisor for government relations at the Heritage Foundation, but you previously served at the Department of Homeland Security and on Capitol Hill.
I did.
I'm telling you, you must be looking, pulling your hair out. What happened? What? Things were going so well. It seemed like the Trump administration came in and said, wait a minute. In fact, he ran on, we're not going to keep going like this.
Right.
I mean, we have an organized system. We're going to reorganize our system because we do love immigrants. But this is not going to work for people just to think they can come anytime they want to and put some components in place. And now it seems like many of those components are, what, gone?
Yes, absolutely. So the Trump administration left the Biden administration a well-tuned machine. And essentially what the goal of the Trump administration was is to tamp down illegal immigration. If you seek to come to the U.S. through a humanitarian reason, say, you know, you're fleeing persecution in your home country, our goal in the administration was to get those claims adjudicated as fast as possible and as safely as possible. The left's goal is very different. They see these humanitarian waves of immigration as vectors for massive illegal immigration. Basically, what they want is as many people to apply for what's called asylum. And when they do that, they want to release them into the interior of the country where they'll never show up for their court dates and they'll never be removed. Why do they want to do that?
It's
very clear, and they brag about this. They think it rapidly changes the voting electorate of the country. And if they promise amnesty and voting rights, and then on the other hand, loosen all of the voter integrity measures that they're trying to do, what you have is immediately Texas, Florida, Georgia turning permanently blue. And when they promise them amnesty and voting rights and get them enrolled in government programs and dependency, it's a perfect recipe for permanent Democratic control.
This seems insidious, and it can't be true. It either can't be true or people are being deceived to vote for parties and peoples that want to destroy the country. Jonathan, I'm wondering about the legal aspect of this. I mean, this is a crisis. And even though they're saying, oh, no, it's not really a crisis, we can manage it. But what Mike is saying is true, that there is an agenda behind what
Absolutely.
We're seeing to give people more power just to control our country, even if it means dramatically changing the country. What should we be thinking about?
Yeah, it's absolute breakdown of the rule of law. And unfortunately, you have these immigration judges that are complicit in it. And the immigration judges are offshoots of whatever attorney general is in place, so they're administrative judges. And it seems to be in the left's advantage to not process these asylum seekers properly, create more and more victims to which they can ultimately have institutional change for governance. And they're being complicit in the courts. They have these immigration judges that are just waiting on some of these cases, not processing them through. I think we're up to 350,000 people that are in the system. And unfortunately, what the legal system is there to do, even the judges that are in place, are being complicit in not allowing it to happen.
The judges themselves
absolutely
are complicit in this.
They're using
their bench to push through an agenda and a worldview?
Absolutely. I know an immigration judge who was working out of San Francisco office, and she was told, she went in there like a regular lawyer wanting to get the job done, and she was told, no, you're processing way too many of these cases, and you're making us look bad. The other immigration judges are telling her, no, slow down, you're making us look bad, as she's trying to process these things. And I think the word you use is absolutely correct. It's insidious. You know, I've traveled to 3 out of the 4 border states, Texas, Arizona. I was in Southern California. I went down across the border to Tijuana. And even the Mexican locals on the other side realize why we need a border wall, why we need border security. The crime is coming right up to their gates. They pointed out the garages and the stockhouses where there are drugs and ammunition and weapons that the cartel is using. So it's a rule of law issue on both sides of the border.
Well, Terry, the Trump administration tried to discuss that component as well and put some things in place with the Mexican government. I understand with the governments of that triangle as well. Is that all collapsing too?
It is, and there's one metric about what Jonathan was just talking about. The Border Patrol publishes this data on their website, so anybody can look it up, is how many arrests the Border Patrol makes of people who they call criminal aliens, or people who already have been convicted of serious crimes. And during the 4 years of the Trump administration, that number went down. It went down from above 12,000 to, I think, a little under 2,000. But so far this fiscal year,
these are people that are criminals that are coming into our country.
Right, the border. These are arrests made by the Border Patrol of people who they then discover have already been convicted of a crime.
Ooh.
And some of these crimes include homicide, but a lot of them are assaults, robberies, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But so far this fiscal year, through data of March 10th, which is the latest they had as of yesterday, there's been an 81% increase over the total for last year.
Right.
for the number of criminal alien arrests made by the Border Patrol. Right. So one thing about this signal we're sending that, hey, the border's open, mm-hmm. is that criminals are coming and trying to get into the United States.
Well, we saw that some with COVID are getting in as well, but I want to make sure that we break this down. We hear all the noise of the news and it just sounds like noise. You're telling me that all those that are coming up, then once they get up to our border, the Border Patrol says, you're arrested, and then they and find out that they are criminals.
Right, right. And there's another
phenomenon. So it's not just unaccompanied minors.
Right.
Families. Boo-hoo.
It's serious criminals. And three specific examples were, and I learned this just by going through the press releases put out by ICE. But Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is the agency responsible for enforcing the immigration laws inside the United States.
And where do they work? Here in Washington?
They work, they're all around the country.
Okay.
And so this calendar year, mm-hmm. they have extradited to El Salvador three people who are charged with murder in El Salvador. One of them was living in
this calendar year, like in the last 2 months?
Yeah, since January. They caught in Las Vegas. They arrested him in Las Vegas. No. Another was arrested in Minnesota.
Oh, no.
And another was arrested in Texas. So all of this isn't happening on the border. You have people in Minnesota who are wanted for murder in El Salvador.
Oh, no. How did he get up there? This is like organized, we know. Absolutely. But it seems like I've been hearing that the cartel then leaves him at the border. So what's going on? Is there some structure in our society that's helping this along?
Absolutely. Right now, the U.S. government is basically the final link in a human trafficking network. These people, when they come up from south of the border, they pay smugglers anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000. What's terrible, too, if you're a young girl, mm-hmm. you have to go out and buy birth control somehow in these countries or Plan B, because rape and sexual abuse on the journey is almost guaranteed. These people are put in the hands of human smugglers, and it's just a terrible situation. Throughout my work in Congress and in the administration, I've reviewed countless of these records. It is a system that is just terrible. And so when we, as a U.S. government, say, if you deliver these people to our border, we will then complete the trafficking network for you by distributing folks from the border to the interior of the country, all we are doing is telling the cartels, we're in business with you. Because you can run them up to the U.S. government and we'll take it from there.
Oh, dear. And Jonathan, I mean, you're a Christian, man. Ooh, these 12-year-old girls, they're putting them on birth control pills? We should be really concerned.
Absolutely. And I like the point that you're making of the criminal syndicate. So the cartel, the Sinaloa cartel that operates right across our southern border, are notorious in their nefarious actions against American citizens. My own family, so my wife's family, had an ongoing attack, really, from a criminal cartel member who continuously committed crimes against the family. And we'd get him arrested, we'd call the sheriffs on him, get him arrested, they would deport him right across the border and he would find his way right back over. And it's that system that's broken down. And saying that the U.S. government is complicit, we actually are. So the Biden administration, in declaring that the southern border is no longer a crisis, not only does it stop the border wall funding, but it takes out that infrastructure and that tracking, the ability for Border Patrol agents to track the individuals that are coming across the border and actually put an end to the criminal activities going back and forth. So saying that we're complicit is absolutely true.
This is really deep, because I'm wondering how many people knew this when they elected Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and now they're tasking her to go solve it. Is she interested in solving this?
I doubt it, but we'll see. Let me give you another data point that I think sheds light on this. Another statistic that the DHS publishes is the number of people that the Border Patrol arrests from different areas from different countries around the world at different border entry points or different border regions. The Border Patrol has different regions on the southern border, Canadian border, and the latest data is from 2019. In 2019, there were more than 2,000 people from the People's Republic of China, for example, that were arrested on the southern border of the United States. But, I mean, you look all around the country. There's people coming from the Middle East. There's people coming from Europe. There's people coming from Asia. And they're going to the U.S.-Mexico border to get into the United States. Why are they doing that?
Sounds like because they can get in.
Yes.
They know that they're now, the invitations come on in. We're wanting you to come and change our country. I don't know is it that they don't think it will impact them. So I have another special guest that I'm going to talk to about the humanitarian part of it. And then I hope that we can get to some solutions after the break. Because, Mike, you're watching the work that you did unravel.
Yeah, it took a long time, too. The Trump administration was fought through the courts, through Congress, basically through congressional inaction, all the way up to the Supreme Court on many fronts. And so it really took to year three, year four, for things to finally get humming. We left a completely functional system that focused on border security, you know, processing legal immigration effectively, and just serving the American interest in that, you know, we should take immigration that benefits America.
I'm not sure that, and we probably have to have a longer discussion when I bring you back as a panel about what that means, mm-hmm. to benefit America, because I think we benefit from both sides, but I do like the fact that we're talking about organizing it to where we're being equitable, not just to the American side of it, the economic mm-hmm. side of it, but the emotional side, that toil that is taken on others. So I'm going to come back with a special guest that knows that humanitarian part really well, and then I'll bring my panel back right after that. Well, the panel gave us a lot to think about with all those criminals that they're catching at the border, but my heart is with those children, and I'm glad that I have another special guest, Laura Reese. Because she has spent 20 years or more working on immigration issues. You're at the Heritage Foundation now, you've been at the Homeland Security, and you're doing different work on these homeland issues. What's going on? I mean, we're hearing countless stories of the border. Now, I do know that many are teenagers coming, but families are coming too. Mm-hmm. And I do know that we're not able to get all of the pictures and insight into what's really occurring down there at the border, but we're hearing stories that it's not looking good.
It really is a tragedy, and it doesn't need to be this way. There's a long history here, and this goes back to 2000, really, where California representative and senator introduced what was called the Unaccompanied Alien Child Protection Act, and they sold it as protecting children and preventing them from coming to the U.S. But on reading of it, it was very easy to see that the opposite would result, that parents would send their kids more often unaccompanied to the border, because what it did is it lowered the bar and provided benefits to children coming here. It said that the U.S. would quickly parole them into the U.S., that they shouldn't be detained more than a few days because they're children, that they would be given taxpayer guardians ad litem and attorneys, and that they would be given a special immigrant juvenile visa. I mean, it just went on and on, all because they were children.
Who was the congressman? Do you remember by chance?
So it was Senator Feinstein and Representative Zoe Lofgren from California.
Build it and they'll come.
Right.
And they'll come young.
Yep.
And this was year 2000, you said?
That was 2000 when it was first introduced.
Okay.
And it didn't pass then. They introduced it every Congress until in 2008. Another California representative, Representative Berman, said, well, we're going to roll this into a bill I know will pass called the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act. And they changed the header to describe it as preventing child trafficking, but the same benefits. And this bizarre change of or distinguishing of whether you are coming from a contiguous country or everybody else. Mm-hmm. So if you came from Canada or Mexico, the government would send you back. If you came from anywhere else, you got to stay into the U.S. and be put into removal proceedings, which takes years.
But that must be why then we started seeing these other countries come.
Absolutely.
Because all of a sudden we're faced with this amazing crisis from not just Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, but other countries. They seem to get down there and come on up in.
That's right. And I have yet to hear an explanation of why the different treatment of contiguous nationals versus everybody else.
Well, even if they had an explanation, I'm just really looking at this. And to my panel, I told him it almost sounds insidious that you would deliberately draw young children thinking they can escape into a better world, which oftentimes it might be that way. But why would you do that to them knowing what's happening to them, to our country, knowing what's happening at the border, to the emotional toll that is taken on people that really do want to be benevolent and help. What is behind this?
Well, there is an interesting set of bookends, because as we have been seeing this play out the last few weeks, just last week, the House voted to pass amnesty for anyone who came here as a child. And so from start to finish, this seems to be by design. We're going to give you all these benefits because you came as a child, and we're going to give you a green card because you came as a child. Well, yes, that's how you designed it.
Yeah. And your colleague over at Heritage said, yeah, it's just to get future voters.
I mean, I don't it's hard to conclude something else. Yeah. And I truly don't understand. The Secretary of Homeland Security keeps repeating, we will not expel children right now.
This is the new secretary.
This is Secretary Mayorkas.
Yeah, Mayorkas, because we know that the Trump administration put some rules in place and said, look, we're a humanitarian country. We love people, and we're going to continue that part of America. And I think Americans appreciated that. But this crisis has to stop. It would seem like it was stopping, and now all of a sudden we're seeing this uptick, and they are getting younger, and it's much more dangerous, especially with the pandemic going on.
That's right.
You're hearing numbers that lots of them have the COVID, but that means that they're needing health benefits as well. What are you sensing will not only stop this flow, but what will happen to those that already are in our system are going to now not be sent out of our country?
So what needs to happen to stop this flow is to secure the border.
Okay.
It means...
Which we heard they stopped that too. They stopped the building of the wall.
Yeah, day one. So unfortunately, President Biden threw out measures that were working well simply because President Trump's name was on it. And he stopped, President Biden stopped the wall construction. He stopped the Remain in Mexico program, which allowed people to continue to apply for asylum, but it had them wait in Mexico rather than come into the U.S. and disappear into the interior while their proceedings were happening. And also, President Biden stopped the very effective third country agreements we had with the Central American countries.
Right.
Asylum is about safety, it's about protection.
Right.
And if someone's truly fleeing for their lives, they should and would ask for help in the first safe country that they arrive in, not traverse three countries just to seek it in the U.S.
Well, we know that their goal is to get here. I mean, we are the blessed country. But I also wonder about the, you know, he's just undoing because it's Trump policy. Because prior to President Trump, we saw these crises as well. In fact, that's one of the reasons that Trump came up the, or down the escalator saying, hey, they're bringing in drugs, guys. They're bringing in criminals. We need to do something about border. So it was a big deal for him because there was a crisis already under the Obama administration. Now we're seeing the people that were part of the Obama administration in powerful positions here in Washington, D.C., and we have a crisis again. Is there something that we can do to stop it? They're telling us that now Kamala Harris, the vice president, is going to be tasked to do immigration issues. I didn't know that that was her specialty area, but if it is, what do you think she's going to do? Or what can we as American people that are concerned push her to do?
Well, she, while she was in the Senate, she was not a fan of immigration enforcement. So I don't anticipate her starting to enforce our immigration laws,
she's from
unfortunately.
California, and I don't see evidence of it there either.
Right, right. So it's going to be up to the American people, the states, attorneys general in the states, to push back, to be vocal, and to fight back where they can.
Well, where can they? What are some of the things that maybe some of the states should be thinking about, especially border states, even though, you know, once you're released in this country, we can go anywhere.
Right. Yeah. So it involves things like E-Verify, and using that to make sure that employers are hiring lawful workers.
Because that is two sides. We talked in the panel about the, you know, that low-wage guy coming and then how we want the higher immigrant status to come, if you will, the technology folks, people adore the medical parts of it. But there are also those that are coming in low-wage. And so I asked about the union because I know that, you know, we have unions don't seem to be really weighing in on this, but also when you have the right, the chamber and the business community saying we want migrants, we want migrant workers, they even call them. So it seems like you got two things going on here, not just what's happening, you know, for those that just want open borders, but those that say, but our businesses need this low wage to survive.
Yeah, with respect to the unions, I think there is a a division between union leadership and the rank and file of the union members in terms of finding jobs and competition.
It is. It seems like the immigrant will draw those wages down.
Right, and the first group that would argue against this are those who came here lawfully and say this just simply isn't fair.
Oh, we're seeing the Latino community, the Hispanic community here are saying, wait a minute, we're American and we've been here and are generationally been here and this isn't fair to us. They're even forcing us to go back to the Spanish language, and we have three generations here that don't even speak Spanish. They just happen to have the heritage. So you're right, and actually it reflected in the election. Many of them voted for President Trump as a result of saying, I like what we're now feeling at the border. I like the new activity to make it more legal. So that is one point. I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but that was a good point, that there is concern even in those communities to say, we need a legal system.
Yeah. Americans want to be secure. They want a secure border, and they want economic security. And the economy did very well by, all sorts of groups during the Trump administration. And it is quite the juxtaposition now to see how quickly that border security has just been, kicked out the door.
It just unraveled. It's just like overnight. It's
within weeks. Like, within weeks.
Within weeks. And now we're looking at crisis again. And we're looking at a crisis during a very difficult time. Our economy's just now trying to reopen. We got teenagers coming to our country, and our own teenagers are not in school yet.
Exactly.
This is not good. I really appreciate you being with me, Laurel. And we're going to be following this, and we're going to be finding more solutions to what we need to be thinking about and doing. We just have to cure this problem. So I hope that you'll come back and be with us again.
Of course. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. I'll be right back with my panel. We're looking for solutions right now. No, right after this message. Sorry for the parents. I feel sorry for those countries. This is a mess. And as was said, the Trump administration put some components in place that we should have built off, and instead we see the unraveling. So I have Terry Jeffrey with me. We have to have a journalist in the room, so thanks for being with us. Back with my panel, I have Jonathan Alexandre. Wow, he told us a little bit about what's happening with those judges. Corruption.
Right, absolutely.
We have a lot of purging to do in our country. This is so bad. I don't like hearing what you guys are telling me, and especially Mike. I don't like what you're telling me, Mike, but I have to have him here because he was over at the Department of Homeland Security, and so he knows, and he's over at Heritage continuing that work on these immigration issues. So thanks for being with me, guys. This is not pleasing. This is not pleasing. But there were some things that the new administration came in to actually undo right away.
Right. So they had a playbook months before, even throughout the campaign. And it's basically to undo everything that Trump did. It's a reactionary kind of view that Trump bad, so let's undo everything. Immigration activists were driving this, open borders activists. Okay. And the major things that they got rid of are there was a program called Remain in Mexico, where people who were seeking to apply for asylum in the U.S. had to wait in Mexico for their claims to be adjudicated.
Is that 40 thing?
It's different than Title 42, okay. But this one was important because if you can't just show up to the U.S. border, get let in, and then flounder, evade deportation, you're not going to make the journey.
And they really didn't.
It worked.
You start seeing the numbers go down.
It worked.
Yeah, okay.
And so they scrapped that.
Okay.
And in addition to that, they told ICE, which is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the people who remove illegal aliens from the country, you can't do that anymore.
Okay.
And so once they promised they were going to do that, people started coming to the border. Another major thing is, why wouldn't you? If you wanted to come and the cops aren't going to remove you, of course you're coming.
Time to go.
And then the biggest thing that I think most acutely hits this crisis now is there's this thing called Title 42, which is basically a public health justification to say no one's coming in because of COVID. So what the Biden administration did...
Okay, so that was in place.
That was in place.
Can't come in because of COVID.
Across the board. And so what the Biden administration did is turned it off for certain categories, and that category is anyone under the age of 18. And so what does that tell to the traffickers and smugglers? All right, bring all the people under 18.
No,
and let's make one thing clear that I think is so misconstrued in the media. 75% of the people coming under 18 mm-hmm. are 15 to 17 year old.
Okay.
Okay, so we're not talking about small
little
children
kids.
In the bulk,
yeah.
which is a completely different problem than working age people coming here to work at the ages 15, 16, 17, who are coming by and large because they have jobs lined up within the country. Two separate areas to focus on in my view.
Well, no, and it is, because when you think about it, I mean, we have these labor laws that won't even let our own teenagers do some work.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, when you think about someone 15 to 17, they can be really exploited. And we're looking already at the crisis in our foster system, to where once they're emancipated, they end up on the streets. This is really bad what is happening right now. Jonathan, we have to solve it.
And the economic consideration, honestly, has been a pretext for playing on the sensibilities of the generous Americans that say, well, you know, they need our help or they need economics. But you
and
know,
a lot of people do help. They open their church doors and just trying to do what we can. But there's a dependency on government to do things right. This is not good what this administration
and
is doing to the American
And we can
people.
Do things right. I mean, our border is probably one of the most cross-border daily in the entire world. And there are several hundreds of thousands of people that come across the border both ways, either living in California, going down and having practices in Mexico, or day workers coming up from Mexico. And so that there's economic transactions done all the time. There's thousands and thousands of material goods that are processed across the border all the time legally, things that we're able to track, that we're able to earmark, things that we can pay close attention to. What needs to be stopped is the illegal activity. So playing on the American sensibilities of generosity and saying that it's purely for economic reasons, that's not true, because the economic transactions can be done legally. This is the legal process that we're trying to curtail.
Well, I thought we built a wall, though. What happened to the wall? How are they getting in?
They stopped building it, and they're letting them around it. But another way of looking
at it... Wait, who stopped building it?
The Biden administration stopped building it.
Oh, geez.
And it didn't get finished, and it's so we don't have an effective barrier at the border. But another way to look at the unfairness of this is what it says to people who want to legally immigrate to the United States and follow the law. Back in the 1980s, I was in Damascus, Syria once, and a guy was driving me across town, and there's all these people lined up around a building. And I said, what are those people doing? He said, they're waiting in line to get a visa to go to the United States.
Oh, wow.
And it struck me that here are these people under this authoritarian regime at the time run by Hafez al-Assad, and there are people walking illegally across the border from Mexico into the United States, and these people are waiting in line in Damascus, Syria, hoping and praying that they get an opportunity to immigrate legally to the United States, where they want to respect our laws.
Well, I think that's the part that bothers me the most. I mean, my heart... It's really hurting because of what we're seeing about these young kids that are being basically sold into slavery, sex trafficked, and slave labored. But the people want to be here legally, and they've stopped that flow. That now we've moved into the place where we say, it doesn't matter what you do. You just come on in, especially what you guys were just talking about, the criminal element. Whereas there are real crises all across the world that people want to be here. They want to come legally. They want to, not just for asylum reasons. You brought up asylum, too, so I want to touch on that. But talk a little bit about the economic conditions in their countries. What can we do to fix them so that so many are not lining up?
Well, I mean, clearly the United States of America is one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We're one of the freest countries in the world. This is the best place to live in the world. And
I like Italy because they have fashion.
Okay, Italy is a great country too, but especially with modern communications and technology, even poor people in the third world all around the globe can see through media a little bit of a picture of what life is like in the United States. So you cannot blame them for wanting to come here and be a part of the greatest country on earth.
Even when they hear the complaining from BLM and the rest of them, they're like, hey, I'll take your place. Why don't you come to my country?
But there is an important distinction between those who respect the law and are going to try and come here legally and those who disrespect the law and are going to come here illegally.
Well, now tell us what it is.
Well, it's disrespect for the law.
That's right.
But, I mean, everybody who illegally crosses, you know, there's some people who will come to the border and they'll say, I'm claiming asylum. They'll tell that, and they'll go to court, and they'll make a case, and they'll be granted asylum. That's a lot different than someone who sneaks illegally across the border.
Well, that's true.
Because they want to live illegally in the United States.
Yeah, but even on the asylum question, if I recall, the former president and his administration tried to put components in place to say, we will process that very rapidly, but you're going to stay on the other side of the border for us to get that done. So even if people say, I'm in horrible persecution, can you help me? We were willing to help.
And there are legitimate asylum claims that have to be reached, but there are also folks that know and can game the system. And, you know, asylum requires, you know, it's a three-part test. If you're having persecution for a number of categories, either political or religion or your skin color, in your other country. And so folks sort of know that script, and so everyone's claiming asylum. Everyone's an asylum victim. So one of the solutions, one of the things that we need to do is properly analyze who's coming over the border. And, of course, there needs to be resources for that. There are the economic migrants, folks that are they're coming to make a dollar, and that's fine. We can make provisions for them. You know, they're day workers, but they're asylum seekers. And at the same time, they're criminals and terrorists. And one of the things that we need to do is make sure that everyone that comes across the border, everyone that is lining up, is given an allocation, given an identity. And we need the immigration judges to be on their game and make sure that they're identifying which groups these individuals fall in.
You know, they sound like they all need to be fired because we might need to go to a new crop that are going to be honest. Because like Terry was just telling us, they have lines of people waiting their turn. And on this question of asylum, you know, you're right. You can make up any excuse to say that, well, I'm being terrorized in the country that I'm coming from, but we don't have room for everybody to come here. So what can we do to fix their countries? I thought that I read somewhere that President Trump attempted to build some coalition with the countries where we're seeing most of the migration, the very, Guatemala, El Salvador, you know, down that way. What's wrong with their countries? Why can't we help them fix them? Why can't they get themselves a rule of law and type of constitutional order that we have so that people will want to stay there? It's certainly not the climate. They live in a beautiful area.
So I think the first thing to understand is that these are economic migrants posing as, you know, refugees or those seeking asylum. So we need to address, you
know, starvation, they might say no.
Right. I worked in immigration court for some time, and I could tell you we saw the same script over and over and over again from, you know.
Well, the new script is that Trump was cruel, and now we need to fix his cruelty.
But the first thing we can do to help these countries is to stop hurting them. And how we're hurting them is by taking the bulk of their working age, you know, young talent away. So El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras are not going to get better if we cyclically just take all of their young workers. Because what they're doing is they're working in America. They're not building businesses in their home country, building up their home countries. It's an endless cycle.
That is an interesting way to look at how to build their economy. But I'm wondering, though, can they do it? Because a lot of these are socialist countries. They're corrupted governments. Is it something that they have to first have their own revolutionary war? Or is this something that can just kind of grow into fixing if we take our attention off of foreign aid and put it on free trade?
And I think that's the ultimate point. The, you know, the USMCA deal, you know, retooling how we trade with other countries, giving them incentives to develop product within their own land, but also trade with the United States, giving fair terms with other nations that have historically taken advantage of them. China's coming into the nations in our southern border and having deals that aren't sustainable for those countries. And so, of course, folks are fleeing. So
because the alphabet soup, the deal that you just talked about, the MC.
Yeah, so the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, really retooling NAFTA, which was an agreement that was there from years prior.
So the last administration reorganized the NAFTA into now this new arrangement that would allow for more openness in trade,
exactly,
for them to try to stabilize their own countries. What happened? Did it just fall apart? Or?
Well, you need an administration. You had a Trump administration that put it forward. You need a Biden administration that needs to continue to run with it. And to your point, Biden's administration hasn't had that incentive. All they want to do is reverse what Trump has done. And so they not only are not going to, you know, honor the USMCA, but they won't build on it with other nations. Something the Trump administration was great about doing is being able to set out a framework that works in one area but also impact other nations. And I think that's one clear solution that we can do through trade deals.
Well, I'm wondering if there's enough buy-in in their countries. Like, is there an underground of people that really want to live free? Obviously, things can change. I mean, look what happened in the Middle East under the leadership of the Trump administration. Who would have thought that now you have all of these Muslim countries that are saying, now we're going to work closely with Israel. We're starting to see it grow. can that happen here? We only have another 30 seconds, but I'm wondering, can it? Can it happen to Guatemala? I think it has to.
One thing that we have to present is the alternative. And I think, obviously, folks in that country that are coming to the U.S. are looking for an alternative. They're looking for an economic alternative. The U.S., being the economic powerhouse that it is, can help countries, not by dictating to countries, but helping them, giving them the framework that they need to build a capitalist society, incentivizing work.
And keeping their workers in the country. Exactly. Mike, that was an interesting perspective. It's just like, if you're going to have 15, 16, 17-year-olds, men, let's build an economy. Let's teach them the tools to build an economy. Hey, maybe that's what we should do. At the border, we'll put up these little schools, training schools, to go back now.
And it's been done. Israel did the same thing on their southern border when they're dealing with an influx of migrants from the Sahara. They had training schools. It was humanitarian first, but they had training schools so that folks returning back to Eritrea and Sudan on the Israel border could actually go back and build things.
Really? I'm thinking I'm just kind of talking out the box, but we've actually already tried. I even read about this concept called charter cities. So there are a lot of new ideas on the table, so I'm glad you guys shared some with us that we have to think about it on helping people. How do we cure it? So thanks, Mike, for being with me, Jonathan, Terry, and I'll be right back with some final thoughts. We've heard some important information about what is wrong with our immigration system and why it is so critical to get a handle on this border crisis. I mean, I was almost in tears with our guests. This is not a good thing. In fact, the border crisis has risen to the level of the Biden administration first saying, what crisis, to now they've actually tasked the Vice President, Kamala Harris, to be in charge of the border situations on behalf of the Biden administration. We'll see what happens there. But just blaming Trump does nothing to solve the problem. The waste and the inefficiencies of foreign aid money is well documented. In fact, Transparency International publishes an annual report. It's called the Corruption Perceptions Index, and it rates countries worldwide based on perceived corruption. And out of 180 nations rated, with 180 being the worst, El Salvador ranks 104, Guatemala rates 149, and Honduras rates 157. The root cause of poverty, violence, persecution in these countries is corrupt, mismanaged governments, not the absence of U.S. taxpayer dollars. American taxpayers should be concerned that those that are running our government now think sending money, hundreds of millions of U.S. taxpayer funds, to some of the most corrupt countries in the world will solve their poverty problems. We know it won't. So why don't we do something new? Let's try something new. Rather than just throwing money at the problem, perhaps we should help these countries get out of poverty and corruption by helping them establish a rule of law, constitutional order, and help them replace their current economic system of socialism with an economic system of capitalism. Helping them create a free country will have long-term impact to help people desire to stay in their own countries, where their families are from. We don't begrudge people for wanting a better life for their families. And in fact, we know that migration is not new, and it's been throughout world history. But the crisis at our southern border, it again highlights the need to truly fix our immigration system and to find ways to help countries around the world out of poverty and corruption, not with foreign aid, but with free trade. As Jonathan just mentioned on the panel, Israel found a solution to a problem they were having at their border. They built a wall. But they also built humanitarian training sites along their southern border to help train the people to develop their own countries. So perhaps that's an answer for us. We can help people get out of poverty by helping them develop strategies and countries to become economically solvent on their own. I think that might be a good solution to the problem we're seeing today at our southern border.